Members Club Ultimate is the ultimate resource for racing enthusiasts and punters, brought to you by The Racing Post. To celebrate the Grand National, new customers can get their first month of Members Club Ultimate for just $14.99. Head to racingpost.com and click on subscribe, then enter code GRAND21 to unlock the discount for your first month. Welcome back to the Racing Riot podcast and a bumper episode to celebrate the Aintree Grand National. Charlie, it's a big race. It's a big moment, and your brother's got a big ride in it as well. Manella Celebration. Are you nervous for him going into a race like that? The occasion is massive.
I'm not nervous for him. I'm excited. It's something I never managed to do, to have a ride in the race, and that's a personal thing that actually really rankles with me. Le Beau Bai was supposed to run in it 1 year and the ground dried up too much, so it wasn't declared. And then I think the year after Ikaduru Road, the whole plan all along was for him to run in the race, and he sort of had issues. His bloods weren't quite right, so the blood tests that they take, the results weren't coming back right, and he had an average spring and so didn't go. And so, yeah, so from a personal point of view, it's one of my regrets amongst many that I never rode in the race. So I'm really excited for Ben that he's got a spin in the race. Manella Celebration, he jumped well through the early part of the Beecher before Ben and him had the mishap on the bend. So it was positive that he seemed to have a good reaction to the fences. Can he win? Very unlikely. But he's a classy horse to get in the race. I mean, that is the ridiculous thing about the modern day Grand National. Just to be in the race, you have to have an enormous amount of ability. And then it shows that you've got these quality performers that are going off at 6,600 to one. And we have seen in recent times, big price winners can run very well. So I'd love to see him get a clear round. And after that, anything would be a bonus.
Absolutely. Like I say, we've got a brilliant episode ahead. We're going to speak to Richard Johnson, the man that retired this weekend. What a rider. Every sense of the word, a champion. And it's going to be fantastic to speak to him about why he made the decision and what lies in the future for Richard Johnson as well. And then we're also going to be touching bases with John Joe O'Neill, the trainer of the 4-1 favourite for the Grand National, Cloth Cap. He's been a revelation this season and he's extremely well in at the weights. There's no surprise that he is the favourite. Whether 4-1 is short enough is yet to be discussed. Our first guest on the podcast is none other than Richard Johnson himself. A big weekend for him. He hung up the saddle. Richard, how's the last couple of days been and has it sunk in yet? I can imagine that's something that's difficult to get your head around.
Yeah, look, it's been amazing. You know, what people have, you know, said and you know, the amount of messages and calls I've had have been phenomenal, and you know, obviously it's been very touching, the response we've had. You know, for me in my own mind, I'm very happy with the decision, but it's taken me a little bit by surprise. The amount of people that have got in touch, and I still haven't managed to get through all the messages on my phone yet. It'll take me a while.
It's lucky you don't have to pay for the messages, otherwise people might not be getting a response. What do you reckon?
Yeah, it's good to have a good deal with the phone. But no, it's like I say, I'm definitely slightly overwhelmed by the whole thing.
Why was now the right time?
I'd come to the season, to be fair, sort of, I suppose, after Christmas, sort of running up to Cheltenham. You know, I decided that, you know, unfortunately, this year I wasn't, in with the Shouting Jockeys Championship, which is disappointing, but, you know, I still had a great season. Unfortunately, I've just come into that age where, you know, the body does ache a little bit more. And you know, I thought for me it was the right time. I wanted to make sure I sort of hopefully went out, you know, still, you know, riding good horses and still hopefully sort of at the top of the game rather than sort of people trying to get rid of me. So and it was, if Native River had won the Gold Cup, I would have bowed out then. You know, that was obviously a dream, but running up to the Gold Cup, I couldn't have not ridden him. And then it was just trying to find the right sort of day to do it after that, and I felt that Newton Abbott, you know, it was a reasonably sort of quiet weekend on the racing front, and I thought that I didn't want to take away from anyone else's sort of any of the big winners over the next few weeks, and I thought that was the right time for me, and it was great that it was one of Philip Hobbs's, and the fact that Philip and Sarah could be there, and it was a shame that my family couldn't at the moment obviously get to the race course, but for that, unfortunately, that's just the time we live in.
Yeah, again, I just typical you wanting to sort of go out sort of quietly and understated. But
I just like to say though, when spectators do return on race course and Dickie's in the paddock or whatever, there's is going to be a reception. You're going to have to get your head around that.
Oh, he'll love that, I can assure you. Yeah.
I'm a farmer now.
So what he's saying is he'll want a fee to attend. Is if he's going to have it. If it's going to be a Richard Johnson day, he wants a fee. So you need to sort that, Josh.
Charlie. That's not fair.
Just to get delve deeper into that reason. I know physically what you had to go through to sort of maintain your performance and get into the races and stretching and doing all that with your hips and everything. And I just want, but if you'd have been champion jockey this year, would you have retired even if you had have been champion? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I would have. I think I'd come to the decision that it's the right time for me. And again, unfortunately, I'm 43. That I don't bounce as well as I used to, and unfortunately, the injuries I've sustained over the years, everything aches a bit more now. And again, it's just this season would have been my last. And the main thing I didn't want to finish at Sandown for was whoever's champion jockey, obviously it's going to be a tight run thing. They don't want me, retiring on the same day, and whoever's champion jockey, it's their day. I just didn't want to, impact on that. And I think the same as the Gold Cup, I could have easily retired after Nate River was fourth, but the winner of the Gold Cup deserves to get the full day's sort of press and media attention, and I just didn't want to again impact on somebody else's big day.
And physically in retirement, are you going to have to do anything to your body, or will retirement sort of solve all those aches and pains?
Unfortunately, I'll have a new hip. Everybody thought in lockdown having 3 months off was the best thing that ever happened, could ever happen. And but for me, it was almost the opposite, really. My body's almost better the harder I push it, almost the better it feels. When you slow down, things almost ache more. At some point now, in the next 6 months, I'll have a new hip, and hopefully that'll definitely, well, hopefully that'll solve that problem and go from there. But that's just, and that's it's nobody's fault, unfortunately. It's just through different injuries along the way, it's unfortunately hasn't coped as well as the rest of the body.
Ollie Bell put up a brilliant tweet, and he went through the stats of your career. 21,145 rides, 3,824 wins, 43 of those being Grade 1s, 23 of them being Cheltenham Festival wins, and 4 champion jockey titles, and 1 Dickie Johnson. When you read stats like that and what you've achieved in the game, how does that make you feel?
Shocked, I think, probably. I never ever expected I could, have a career like this. Really, it was a dream to be a jockey, and I just feel very, very lucky to actually have had the opportunity, and to be honest, even now when I've read some, feel again. Slightly overwhelmed, some of the stuff I've read about myself, which sounds really, really sad. But over the last few days, it doesn't really feel like I'm reading about myself. I've been in a very lucky position to, done what I've loved doing for 27 years, and if anything. I just feel like I'm the one I love to thank.
The racing world have been very fortunate and lucky to be able to watch you achieve all of that. If you were to speak to 18-year-old Richard Johnson and you were going to give him one bit of advice now, having finished your career, what would you say to him?
I think the most important thing for me was always not to fall out with people, because you'll always have a few days when you don't give a horse a very good ride. And I think, do you mean Early on in my career, I used to get very frustrated, and it's hard not to sort of get off a horse and be a bit grumpy. And hopefully, through my career, I improved on that side of things. But yeah, there was a very good day of rode one for Henry Daly at for the Plumleys at Hereford, and it was quite a nice horse. And I got off it and was basically rude to them, and I think I shocked myself, and I shocked Henry Daly, and I shocked them, and walked back in, and on the way back into the weighing room, I was thinking, what have I just done? And then, to be fair, it was probably the best lesson I ever learned, because I never rode that horse again. And they said to Henry, he'll never ride this again. But I did ride other horses for them, but I obviously apologised, but it was a very good lesson to learn that, to try and keep your cool, and yeah, unfortunately, horses aren't machines. They don't always do what we want them to do or expect them to do or anything else. So it's very, very important to almost take a breath and yeah, just be polite and hopefully sort of not blame other things when things go wrong. But again, it was that day. I think I was probably 19 or 20, and that was a big life lesson for me.
So it's interesting. I was thinking exactly. I wanted to ask him exactly the same thing. What was the best bit of advice he would give to a young rider? Because I was going to say that he's always been a perfect role model, and I didn't know Dickie when he was 19 or 20. So I'm actually amazed to hear something like that. Because I always felt that he was Mr. Consistent emotionally, whether he'd had a good day or a bad day, he always had time for everyone. There's been so many tweets from members of the teams of the yard saying how nice he always was when he was riding the horses and treating everyone the same, which I just think is so important in the sport,
And I agree, outside of the sport as well. I think anyone listening to this that isn't part of racing can take that into their own lives.
Definitely. And so now, talking out the, what was the highlight? Is there one moment that you can pick out amongst all of the great days that was the best?
For me, the highlight is definitely that day at Sandown, the first day of champion jockey, or first year of champion jockey, sorry. During the whole day, which I know is, again, I knew I was going to be champion jockey, but to have, for everyone from my parents to my wife and children, and everybody there, and, even now, I have to sort of take a deep breath. It was for me, that's all I've ever wanted. And that was, I think, the best day of my career.
And at home, you've got Looks Like Trouble and Menorah. Are they the two favourite horses from your career?
Look, I've got so many horses I rode that have been unbelievable, but obviously they're especially in their different ways, really. I think Looks Like Trouble, obviously. Yeah, obviously Gold Cup winner, so he's very special anyway, but obviously he was trained by my father-in-law, he's sort of a family pet, and he's come to live with us ever since he retired, and obviously now he's 29, so we've had him for an awful long time, so he's very, very special to all of us. And obviously Menorah, again, fantastic racehorse, won the Supreme Novice Hurdle, very, very good, but again, I rode him literally 20 minutes before I picked up the champion jockey trophy on that day at Sandown, and he was just one of those horses that, and I think obviously he was trained by Philip Hobbs, he sort of probably he's a great sort of advert for Philip's training, the longevity of the horse, our partnership. I think he's shows all the good things hopefully that we did, and they're both lovely to have here at home, and it's just a nice reminder. Even now, I know I'm not going to ride another race, but they're lovely horses to deal with and to remind us of what we've done.
Menorah, tough, consistent, durable, yeah. Classy. Could be Richard Johnson, couldn't it?
Absolutely.
No, he's good looking as well.
Oh, don't do yourself down, crikey.
Looks Like Trouble being the family pet. It puts my hamster to shame.
Yeah, doesn't it? Just
definitely.
Just, I wonder, when you came into the job again with your riding style so positive, was that modelled on anyone? Was there one rider that sort of, that as a young person coming through, was a role model, someone that you thought, I want to be like, him, because at the time it was?
I'm not sure. it's hard really, because I can't really remember a specific, but I remember obviously Peter Scudamore was, when I was growing up, he was a local sort of Herefordshire, again, lad that when I saw the Sporting Life on the kitchen table, growing up at home, obviously there's always loads of pictures of him because he was champion jockey, and obviously Martin Pipes horses just used to bowl along and obviously usually go 20 lengths clear and never stop. So I suppose I always thought, I suppose just go as fast as possible. That was always my sort of thing in life, and I think that's what I tried to do on my ponies that probably I used to get told off for quite a lot. But I think Richard and Woody was the man when I started riding. I thought I wanted to be like him. But more than anything else, I think that the horse I started on, Rusty Bridge, of my granddad's, was probably one of the slowest horses in history. So you had to just push and kick for forever. So I think that as much as anything else, sort of honed my style that probably I've kept for my career, that, jump off, be handy, and try and kick and push as long as possible. So, it's hard to say it was a jockey. I think in a way, a horse probably ended up giving me my riding style. And Richard and Willie was obviously and Peter Scudamore, they were the two jockeys I sort of remember a lot growing up, thinking, that's my, what I would like to be or like to do or dream of doing.
One of the tributes that sticks out the most is from AP McCoy, and he said that you brought the best out of him. Was that relationship two ways? What did you feel like during that time and battling AP McCoy when he was so dominant in the sport?
Again, I feel that we had a, obviously we're very different people, and we've got our own different lives and everything else. But I think as a mindset, we were very, very similar. We were we wanted to ride as many rides every day as possible and as many winners as possible, and that was for me, that was, and him, I think that's what we thought normal was. We didn't just want to go to Cheltenham and Ascot and Newbury. We whether it was Hereford or Plumpton or Sedgefield, we felt that we wanted to go everywhere. And so I think we had a very similar sort of outlook. And I think we definitely brought the best out of each other. And Jimmy, there's, even though we sat next to each other and we were great friends, it was always a little cheeky smile when you come back in if I beat him or he beat me, or obviously usually he beat me. But it was always nice somehow to come out on top if we were at a close finish.
I mean, it was a rivalry on paralleled. I mean, I think we have to give
a relief when he retired.
Yeah, we have to give credit to Dave Roberts as well, who is his agent to both. I'm just wondering, from an earning capacity for Dave Roberts, did he cry when you told him you were giving up?
Yeah. Well, I think he cried more when AP probably gave up. And then, I think then I've just sort of literally that last push. But look, I think, so many people through my career have said that, why would you have the same agent as AP and everything else? But obviously, Charlie, you know and you understand, you ride for the people you ride for, and an agent, all they could do is ring up and offer your services. And for me, Dave Roberts was the best at it. And also, where people obviously think that he rings to get every ride possible, he also, there's also a part of him that is also looking after you. He's also trying to, get you on the best horses, but probably keep you off some of the ones that you don't want to be riding. So for him it's a bit of a juggling act to sort of get you as many rides as possible and for as many winners, but obviously keep you in one piece, because you're no good to him or yourself if you're injured. So it's that in itself is a I think something that he did really, really well for me and AP and all the lads he has sort of on his book. So I feel he was a huge part of my consistency and my career.
Couldn't agree more. I think as well he sort of epitomised in an agent the same mentality that you yourself and AP had throughout of it, as in he was completely obsessed with racing. Well, he still is completely obsessed, and I'm sure he's sort of racking his brains trying to think who's going to be champion next that he's going to be looking after, because I can't imagine he's going to be resting on his laurels. And I'd say it's killing him not booking rides for the champion jockey, in all honesty, do you think?
Yeah, no, I think he obviously had 24 years in a row that he you know, he looked after champion jockey. So, you know, for him as well, it was the norm. It was what he obviously loved doing. And again, you know, Charlie, but when you ring him, you can ask him for a number of any trainer in the country, and he will reel it off, like, off his tongue, off from memory. And he is so switched on. He's just on the ball, and it's his life, he's definitely as determined or dedicated as every jockey.
And just one last question, I think you touched on it earlier. Moving forward, is it just going to be Richard Johnson Farmer, or is there something else in the pipeline?
Definitely hopefully going to go back and be involved with the family farm, and you know, we're breeding horses here now. We have done for sort of a few years now, and I'm hoping to sort of slightly expand that, and obviously, you know, try and breed as many winners as possible, and obviously sell some to you, Charlie, which is very important. And
hey, you make sure you look after me now, as in I want the nice ones. You know, don't be putting
Charlie,
any of the drops.
Charlie, you always have the best ones.
And are you excited about doing the farming? Like, you know, after the sort of all in sort of intensive life of being a jockey, is there something quite appealing now about just being at home in Herefordshire with your family and farming?
Yeah, no, definitely. Look, I think for me now, I again, you know, my family have given up, you know, an awful lot. They've a lot of them have put their lives on hold. You know, Fiona's been flat out looking after three children. You know, I've missed a lot of, you know, family stroke, events and things, you know, social occasions that I couldn't get to, and they've been very supportive, and literally, you know, they're the ones that have actually given up an awful lot for me. So I think it'll be nice to, you know, put that right. And also, actually, I'm looking forward to, you know, taking the children to do things on their ponies or to play sport or, different family occasions or social events that we can actually all go and do together, which, you know, they have literally, you know, survived without me for all this time. So, you know, they might get bored of me very quickly, but hopefully, yeah, that's something I'm really looking forward to. And obviously with the farm, yeah, you know, it'll be nice not getting in the car for 6 hours every day and you know, hopefully being busy at home, sort of, you know, slightly slower pace, but, you know, hopefully equally as rewarding.
Well, I'm sure the next step as a farmer and breeder and stay-at-home father is going to be every bit as successful as what's gone before, mate. And I know Josh and I wish you all the best with that. And well, we can't wait to see you soon. And like I say, I'm looking forward to coming and seeing these young horses and seeing if we can pick out a potential star bred by Richard Johnson and prepared by Charlie Post. That has a good ring to it, Josh, doesn't it?
It does. Definitely does. Wonderful to speak to Dickie. He's just, I could listen to him all day.
He's just the nicest man. I was driving back from Yorkshire on Saturday when, again, on WhatsApp groups like you all have, someone put on there, unbelievable, I can't believe this. And so you're like, oh, what the hell's happened? And to see that he'd retired, I mean, I kind of thought about it the other day. Was I shocked? I probably wasn't shocked. I was surprised at the timing of it, being completely honest. But I think you've heard there again, it's sort of typical him that he was more worried about stealing anyone else's thunder, the champion jockey or the Gold Cup winner. And then I thought, I wanted to put a tweet up, but it took me a long time to think of the words about how I wanted to describe him. And like I say, I felt very much that, yes, we'll all talk about his career statistics and his achievements, but it's the fact, like, his lasting legacy will be the incredibly nice guy that he was, in spite of being such a fierce competitor. Like, he was Mr. Consistent on the track and off it as well. He was never rude. He had time for everyone. As a young rider, he always had time for words of advice. And like I say, whether he'd been beat a short head or whatever, you knew it was driving him crazy inside, but he never let it sort of boil over into being short with anyone or rude. And that, to me, is the thing that I will always remember about him.
And you're coming down to the last. Richard Johnson is alongside. How are you feeling?
You're knowing just go long, because he's going to, like, as in try and find a positive stride, because if you're going to allow your horse to run and pop, you know he's going to be launching his horse at it, whether it's on a long stride or not, because it was always his way. He loved to be aggressive with his riding and positive, and it didn't all, you know, it wasn't always the perfect marriage with every horse, but he made a difference because of that positivity. And like I say, he was always the same, as in you knew when it came to the business end of the race, he was going to be going forward. He was going to be looking for that race winning stride. And I think that was like the defining factor of Richard Johnson so much, that it was that unbelievable positivity regardless.
One of the finest we've seen, and one of the finest races in the racing calendar is the...
And unfortunately, one that he hasn't won.
One that he hasn't won. That's probably one of the only he hasn't won. The Aintree Grand National. It's on Saturday. It's a big one. Millions and millions and millions of people tune in. It's the most watched race there is. Have you got one penciled in? Which one do you fancy?
I mean, it's...
I'll give you three.
Okay, I'm going to say... I thought Any Second Now was very good the other day.
Yeah.
Ted Walsh, lightweight. He knows how to prepare one for this sort of race. There was something in the run of Magic of Light at Cheltenham as well that I quite liked her run. And she's been second before, which I think is a negative, actually, in the stats. The Racing Post did an excellent thing the other day with the trends. And I think from a trends point of view, previous form wasn't actually a major plus. And I'm being straight up with you, Josh. It's hard to get away from Cloth Cap.
Really?
As in my three, yeah, I do. Yeah, wow. As in he's got big race handicap form. He's £14 well in. So if you're looking at that from a handicap point of view, that's ridiculous. And I thought he looked fantastic at Kelso. He's trained by a man that knows how to win the race and knows how to win big handicap chases. He's owned by a guy that's one of the most successful owners of all time in Trevor Hemmings, and also within the National, three previous winners of this race. So, and again, reading through the trends thing, it really gripped me that Cloth Cap ticks, I think, every single box that you're looking for in a modern day Grand National winner.
Unless he wins, you've put up a favourite, and that's poor going. 4-1 favourite in a Grand National.
I've given you three, though.
Yeah, fair enough, but I'm willing to take him on purely at the prices. Look, there's no doubting that he's got the right profile for the race.
Go on then, where's your three?
Well, you've got to look back. Tiger Roll had won a Grand National. He'd been nigh unbeatable, and he only went off 4-1 in his second year.
The price, I agree with you, is incredibly short. But it might not look that short come the day.
I think it'll be bigger on the day. So if you're going to back in, wait until the morning. I've got three for you. The one that I quite like the most would be the Storyteller, who loves good ground. He's a Grade 1 horse. He's a Grade 1 winner this season, and he always runs his race. I think he's got that class angle to him, with the likes of Bristol and May being there at the top of the weights. He's not got too much to lump round, although, you know, 4 miles and a quarter is something we've not seen him run over yet, and I don't think many horses have run over that distance. So it's going to be interesting. I think he's classy. I think he'll be right there. Burrow Saint, who won the Irish Grand National at 6, would be my second pick. A couple of years down the line, that race usually is a good telling sign for the entry Grand National.
Would you worry that Paul Townend possibly isn't going to be able to ride him?
I think the horse is classy enough. You would be, obviously, it'd be a plus if he did. But yeah, I think he'd have a good chance as well. I think he's been found in the market, and he'll go there with a massive chance, being Willie Mullins' first string. And then one maybe at a bigger price would be Lord Dumanil. I think that he will stay the trip. That's one guarantee. He might not be as classy as the other two that we've spoken about. But yeah, Richard Hobson had him A1 the last day. He's so tough. And if it got into a battle, he'd be the one for me under Nick Schofield. And he's about 40-1. So that's a big price as well. But with all this debate around Cloth Cap, I think we should speak to the man that knows him best himself. And that is Jonjo O'Neill. He's rated 148 in the Grand National, but his official rating is 162 because he's been extremely impressive since at Kelso. So he's £14 well in. Let's hear the thoughts of trainer Jonjo O'Neill.
We're very lucky to be joined by the man, the racing legend that trains the big race favourite Cloth Cap, Jonjo O'Neill. Jonjo joins us now, and firstly, Jonjo, how is Cloth Cap? Is everything A1 ready for Saturday?
Touch wood, everything is A1 at the minute, thank God. Delighted with him. He's doing everything as we want him to, so just fingers crossed now until Saturday.
And between now and Saturday, it's literally just going to be routine exercise every day, just letting him stretch his legs, everything, all the major prep's been done.
Yeah, he did his last bit yesterday morning and everything seems to be fine, thank God. So, yeah, just ticking over now and fingers crossed, legs crossed, everything crossed, keeping safe and sound for the day.
Absolutely. And one thing that people are talking about is the fact that he's not jumped around the entry fences before. Has he schooled over them?
He's good at what I've seen up to now, so I'm going to leave him as he is.
Do you give them a jump over a replica national fence, John Joe, or are you just happy that he's a good jumper and you're going to leave it at that?
Well, I used to build about three or four entry fences every year, and the man that was doing it was ill that year, and we didn't build any. And that was the year that Don't Push It won the national. So I haven't schooled any over national fences ever since. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know, but it worked that time anyway. And I think sometimes they're better off it's something new for them and fresh for them to look at, you know.
With regards to Don't Push It, how would Cloth Cap compare?
They're both nice horses. Cloth Cap wouldn't be as good a young horse as Don't Push It would be. He'd be a much classier horse. He ran in the Arkle. He was beaten a length or something by Denman at Cheltenham in a novice chase. So he was a much classier horse, really. But this fella seems to have the right attributes for this race. He stays. He was third in the Scottish National. He jumps well, touch wood. So he's well in at the weights. So his chances this year, if everything goes according to plan, but as we all know what the National is like, everything crossed, as I said, you know.
He's been an absolute revelation this year and has improved for every single run. What would you put that down to?
I don't know is the answer. He came in a different horse. He was a stronger horse, probably a year older. The plan was last year to go for the National. Nothing went right, and he wasn't handicapped high enough to get in. So, you know, that's horses for you. They're like kids. They grow at different times, and he just come good at the right time, hopefully.
Oh, you probably answered the question, because I was going to say, when did this become the plan? Was it after the Ladbrokes Trophy then this year that it was, you know, we're going to really have a go and protect his mark? Or was it before the Ladbrokes Trophy and the season's been mapped around the National?
Well, it was planned last year. Myself and Mick were talking about it last year, but unfortunately it didn't happen. And even then we said we'll plan and go for the the Ladbrokes. And that was the plan. And then coming up to the Ladbrokes, we're thinking, oh, he's not going to get in the handicap, you know. And then he goes and wins it like he did, and he went up enough to get into the race then. So we said we'd leave him. He's a good ground horse, as we all know, and we'd leave him until the weights come out. And that's what we did. And, you know, he then went to Kelso. We wanted to go to Doncaster, but we're a bit nervous as a ground horse. So it was a bit nicer ground at Kelso, and that's where we took our chance. There, really, we weren't well in with a few of the horses, but I think a few of the older horses didn't really run to their mark, but he did it really sweetly and did everything right. Tom was delighted with him, so here we are.
Absolutely, and this will be Tom's third spin on Cloth Cap. He's been they've built a brilliant relationship this season, and it started in the Ladbrokes Trophy. How come you decided that Tom would ride him in the Ladbrokes Trophy?
He was the only less fat one that I could get to do 10-2. And he was a good substitute, so that was the reason.
He certainly was. I'm sure he's delighted that you've called him that. He'd be over the moon to have a ride like Cloth Cap in the Grand National. He's 4-1 favourite. He's an extremely short price for a race like the Grand National. And does that add a bit of pressure?
Not really. I mean, you know, the National, as we all know, is the National, and we're in it, and we're in it well. He'll never get a better chance again, but everything has to go right, doesn't it, you know? without doubt. The pressure is on the horse rather than me. I can't do any more until I get him there safe and sound, really. We're delighted with him, and we're going there with a light chance.
It'd be brilliant for Trevor as well. I think it would put him, stand him on his own as an owner to win four grand nationals. And how often would you be speaking to him about Cloth Cap and keeping him in the loop?
Trevor's very excited, and he's a great sportsman, really, and he loves the national, as we all know, you know, so to get a live chance. He's got two runners in it, so he's got two chances. For his favourite, that's the only thing that's making him more excited, I think, really. But we're delighted with him, you know, so we're going now full of hope, as the fella says, you know.
Well, best of luck, John. I'm sure once coronavirus restrictions allow, if Clock Cap was to win the Grand National, there's going to be a big party up at Jack Dawes Castle.
But just so long as he puts up a good show and everything goes according to plan, he comes home safe and sound, as always, another day, you know?
Well, like I say, Josh and I wish you the very best of luck. And look, like he said, if it does come off, don't forget our invite to the party. And we'll be there. We'll be there celebrating with you.
You're more than welcome, lads. All the best.
I get the sense that he's playing it down a little bit.
I think with John Joe O'Neill, he's been there so many times as a rider on the big occasion and as a trainer that he's not going to let himself get swept away with the sort of like cascade of support behind Cloth Cap. And he's going to play it down because he knows that anything can happen in a Grand National. And look, you can have all these stats and trends in your favour. You can be £14 well in and the horse can go and over jump at the first and knuckle over or get no luck in running, or anything can happen, Josh, can't it? So he's just keeping it on the level. But I'd say underneath it all, he's brimming with confidence going into the race.
I agree. Looking at the race, how far has it come? You know, we've got Bristol & May rated 167, the Storyteller 165, and the likes of Burrow Saint 156. These are really classy horses that wouldn't be far away, potentially, in a Gold Cup. Well, Bristol & May's proven that. How far has the race come?
Oh, I mean, beyond recognition. As in, I remember as a youngster, you'd have horse, I mean, one, you wouldn't even get full fields at one stage. And so two, then you would have horses with absolutely no chance that were incredibly average with the greatest respect in the world, just pitching up and almost getting in the way. And this is credit to the jockey club, racecourses, you know, Aintree itself, the management team, the modifications, because there's no doubt, again, it's not the test it once was. I mean, it's just an incredibly good handicap chase run over slightly modified fences now would be my feeling about it, with enormous prize money that is attracting a stellar field. As we said, it's difficult to get in the National, never mind win it, because of all the things that they have done to make it this occasion. And on top of that, it still has that sort of like social occasion and fanfare that the Grand National has always had. But in its new guise, it's just such a quality contest. And again, it just shows the benefit of fantastic prize money.
It's going to be a fantastic race, as always. And I look forward to watching it on Saturday. Thank you very much for listening. We do hope you enjoy the racing on Saturday, Thursday and Friday. It's a bumper week. And yeah, go well.